I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to continue our conversation about poverty and opportunity in America. It's called Chasing the Dream. Today we will discuss the importance of reliable and affordable mass transit in dealing with poverty. My guests are Sean Northrup of the Indianapolis Metropolitan Planning Organization, Shoshana Spector, Executive Director of Indy Congregation Action Network, and Charlie Davis, an Indianapolis resident whose life and work have been affected by Indy's public transportation system. To join the conversation, please call 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to continue our multi-part conversation about poverty and opportunity. The overall title of this conversation is Chasing the Dream, and we're in part three of it. Today we're going to be focusing on poverty and mass transit, about the importance that mass transit has when it comes to dealing with issues of poverty. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Sean Northrup, who is with the Metropolitan Planning Organization, Shoshana Spector, who is Executive Director of Indy Congregation Action Network, and Charlie Davis, who's an Indianapolis resident, who's got a story about really how he plugs into this question of mass transit and getting back and forth to work in terms of building a life and a stable lifestyle. Welcome, all of you. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Well, I'm going to start actually. I will start with Sean. Let's talk a little bit about, most people don't immediately make the connection between mass transit and poverty. Could you talk a little bit about why these two things do have a relation?
Absolutely. It's kind of the worst kept secret in town that we have an inadequate transit system. We're the 33rd largest region and we're 86th in transit service on the street. Brookings ranks us as 64th in transit access to jobs. We're third from last in seniors' access to jobs after they lose their ability to drive. And those are all rough statistics, but they have some really insidious results, particularly on lower-income households, because in this region, housing is relatively cheap compared to other regions, but transportation costs are actually astronomical. We're one of the most expensive markets in the country for what people spend on transportation. And as people start to look at impacts for low-income households, you're realizing that when you look at budgets, it's not only important to look at affordable housing in terms of how that's affecting people's household budget, it's really also important to look at transportation. So no matter how you calculate transportation costs, AAA says it's $9,000 a year to own and operate a vehicle. That's kind of on the high end. Local group, the Institute for Working Families, has done a bare bones analysis that's closer to $3,000 a year. But either way, it's a huge percentage of income at low-income households.
And Charlie, I think this is probably the appropriate time to pull you into the conversation. Talk a little bit about first what you do, and basically how you get to work.
I basically work in cabinet shops. I've had the experience of working out in Mars Hill. Mars Hill was way out on the west side in a close proximity to the old airport. And so I rode the bus out there for many a year. And one evening I was getting off work. I got off work a little bit later than usual. And I caught the last bus had already gone by, and so I went down to the other end of the street thinking I could catch it down there. And I was able to catch that bus, but that bus was going to the garage, so the driver would not pick me up. So at that point, I had to walk back to town, And so it was over 10 miles for that walk for me. That was made. It was actually pretty dangerous because walking up Kentucky Avenue is without sidewalks, and it was dark at that point in time. So that experience taught me that we needed a better bus system, a better bus service. And so I have continued to ride the bus, and that was my main mode of transportation. And I know what it feels like for people not to be able to get to their job. Bus service that does not run as late as it should is not a benefit to anybody. So I'm hoping that now that we will have a better bus service that will enable people to get to jobs and to work later hours at night and be able to realize that they can come home and without having to walk as far as I did.
Shoshana, how many people would be helped by having a better, more robust system of public transit here?
Public transportation is about helping everybody, whether you ride the bus or you don't. The reality is when your neighbor has the opportunity to get to work like Charlie, then all of us are living in a better community. So as people of faith, IndyCan got involved in public transit because every year we had thousands of conversations around the kitchen table and in coffee shops with people in our pews. And what they told us was, just like Charlie said, no matter how hard they try, they can't get to work. Indiana is the kind of place where we really believe in strong families. And public transit is at the middle of that. All of our churches every day are running food banks and homeless shelters and giving out bus passes. And I think about Alpha Whitaker, a leader of ours who's been very involved. She is a single mom and was offered a job up in Carmel. It was on 116th Street. The bus only goes to 96. So a job with a retirement, a good salary, health care for her children, she had to turn that down. And really, transit is about our commitment to each other and building a fairer city where everyone has the opportunity to succeed.
And I understand what you're saying, that it affects all of us. But the degree to which it affects us varies. And to use Charlie's story here, if I had planned to take the bus to come down here to do this show, and I missed it, I have a perfectly good car waiting for me to drive me down here, and I can make it. It's an inconvenience or an annoyance. Charlie, it sounds like having a reliable system of public transit is a lifeline for you. It's essential, right?
It is essential because a lot of low-income people do not have the wherewithal to purchase a car. And as Sean said, that the cost of owning an automobile and upkeep and all of that is beyond the reach of low-income people. So that bus transportation system that we have should be sufficient enough that people can get to work when they need to and run in a manner that allows people, if they miss a bus, there's another one that's going to come along a little bit sooner, a little bit later. So I have found in my conversation with other people about riding the bus, that's the only way that they can ever make it. They just need that transportation. They depend on it. And if they don't, if it doesn't work out for them, they're not able to get to their jobs, they're not able to feed their families, they're not able to get to educational opportunities, they're not able, for all the things that we take for granted, they're not able to do. So they depend on that bus system solely.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the connection between poverty and mass transit. It's part of our ongoing conversation, Chasing the Dream, Poverty and Opportunity. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Sean, where are, and I want to keep the focus more on, you know, people who are working for whom mass transit isn't an option, it is the option. It's the thing they have to have in order to build a lifestyle, to pursue the opportunity that we're talking about here, and to escape poverty at at some level. Where are the biggest gaps in the current system?
I would encourage listeners to take a look at IndyConnect.org and see the maps of the current system compared with maps in what's called the Marion County Transit Plan, which is a proposed system that Marion County voters will be going to this November, going to the ballot and voting on whether to fund this plan, the Marion County Transit Plan. If you look at the current system, one of the points you made a second ago, John, was about the difference between service that's useful and service that's not useful. And we find that really takes two dimensions when it comes to transit. Transit has to be frequent, which means that you don't have to check a schedule. It means you go out and the bus is coming soon. Otherwise, you're building your day around that transit schedule, and that's very, very hard to do, particularly when you're really busy, as most low-income households really, really are. And the second thing is the hours of service. So right now, transit service in Indianapolis stops relatively early, and it's sporadic. Some routes stop as early as the 6 o'clock hour. Some routes go to midnight. Very few routes go that late. And under this plan, every route in the system would run much later hours. The other thing that happens is that we have three separate schedules right now in the city. We have a Monday through Friday schedule, a reduced Saturday schedule, and a very austere Sunday schedule. And so people that work weekend jobs, which is close to a majority of people, and it is a majority of service workers, have to say, you know, Sundays I'm going to need some special accommodations because it's very, very hard to get to work on Sunday. I see Charlie nodding here too. That changes under this plan. Under this plan, it'd be running every route every day at the same frequency. So a huge number of people would be getting service that goes from just there, a lifeline service that is really only useful to people that have no other choice, to a really frequent, reliable, useful choice. So the numbers for that, the point where that happens is where a route comes every 15 minutes, basically.
How did we get, and I'll throw this out to either Shoshana or Sean, how did we get to this point where, you know, we have a transportation system that lags far behind the general growth of the metropolitan area? What was the, I'm asking kind of a leading question because I know the answer, but it's better having it come from one of your mouths than mine. How did we get to the point where really we have what is a pretty anemic system of mass transit?
It's investment. You get what you pay for. I mean, it's been a series of cuts and then never having a dedicated funding source for transit.
I think that what we're seeing is opportunity in Indianapolis has been segregated. Low-income people of color, especially the ones who are most vulnerable from getting good jobs, living in neighborhoods that are isolated from all the benefits of our communities, getting to work, getting to school, getting to the doctor. The reality in Indianapolis is that half the children in our city are going to bed hungry, particularly in these isolated low-income communities and communities of color. And I think many people know that Indianapolis is second to the bottom in income mobility. So a child born into poverty, the likelihood that they'll make it to the middle class is worse only next to Mississippi. And transit, according to Harvard, is the single most determinant factor of people escaping poverty.
And I know that we haven't invested in it. I guess what I'm trying to get at, too, is why did we not invest in it? The argument, and I'll set it up, so it's probably not fair to either of you to ask a question, make you guess at what I'm asking about. For a long time with transit, there was this argument that it had to stand on it. It could not show red ink. It had to stand on its own. You're making an argument that aside from, you know, whatever revenues it might bring in, there are huge other benefits that come with having a vibrant system. Shoshana, I'm going to let you speak to that one.
Well, I think that all of us believe in creating a common good. Right. So as people of faith, we believe in family, abundance, and inclusion. And public transit is a way to exercise those beliefs. Whether it's public transit, public schools, public libraries, we invest in resources that bring everybody up so everyone has a chance to succeed. It's about creating a fair city where everyone, regardless of their income or their race, has access to a good job and to making their families safe.
If you are just joining us, we are continuing our multi-part conversation called Chasing the Dream about poverty and opportunity. In this show in particular, we're exploring the relationship between poverty and the lack of reliable mass transit. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give me a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Sean Northup. He is with the Metropolitan Planning Organization. Shoshana Spector. She is the executive director of Indy Congregation Action Network. And Charlie Davis, an Indianapolis resident who is living on the front line of this discussion. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today, continuing our conversation called Chasing the Dream, Poverty and Opportunity. Today in particular, we are exploring the relationship between poverty and not having the right kind of mass transit system. My guests are Sean Northup. He is with the Metropolitan Planning Organization, Shoshana Spector. She's the executive director of Indy Congregation Action Network. And Charlie Davis, he's an Indianapolis resident who is dependent on public transportation to sustain his lifestyle and do the work that he does. So we were talking just before the break about how we got to the place where we have a pretty anemic mass transit system. I'm going to start, Charlie, with you on this one by asking what kind of transit system would, and I'm not going to ask you to speak for every low-income person in the city, but to some degree, if you could give me an idea of someone in your situation, what are the most important things that would help you in supporting your lifestyle out of a mass transit system?
Well, the most important thing for me and many other people, as far as that goes, is that the transportation system operates in a manner that is efficient, is timely, doesn't break down as it has in the past in a lot of cases where people would continue to wait for a bus after a mechanical failure or something of that nature, that the system works in a way that if something such as that should happen, that there would be a replacement bus in it that would come along in a timely fashion. People are going to depend on a bus system, so I want my bus to run on time. I want it to run if it's every 10 minutes or every 15 minutes, and I want it to get me to my destination at the time that it is supposed to get there. But I had a conversation with another lady that worked with the homeless shelter, and she can get them clothes, she can get them food, but she can't get them to work. There are going to be jobs that are in isolated areas where the bus transit does not go, or there are going to be places where they are not familiar with and won't know how to get there. So I think it's important that we have a bus system that is very informational and also is easy to ride and to discern what that direction of travel needs to be.
Shoshana, we mentioned before we went to the break that in terms of sort of income mobility and all of that, Indiana's near the bottom. I think, you know, thank God for Mississippi, basically. Otherwise, we'd be dead last. And that public transportation is perhaps the most important factor in making that system more fluid so that people can move up. We've talked about all the ways that we're not doing this right. Are there places in this country that are doing it right? And where are they? What are they doing that we aren't doing and perhaps should?
Absolutely. Regional transit is really our engine of racial and economic equity. By linking communities of color and low-income people to jobs, healthcare, and school, if the referendum passes, we could be tripling the number of African Americans and Hispanics with easy access to transit. So just to give you an example, in Cleveland, where they built a similar kind of project, not only does transit increase access to jobs, but it also creates jobs. For every $1 they spent on transit, they created 36,000 jobs. So you imagine that there's both how the system expansion itself will create good jobs for people in hard-hit communities, but all the development that comes along with a rapid transit line is an opportunity for Indianapolis to really invest in hard-hit communities and make sure that those jobs and those opportunities go to the most vulnerable people. And there's examples all over the country, Atlanta, Cleveland, where investing in rapid transit has actually been a huge boon to the economy.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Rosemary. If you'd like to reach out to us and join this conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what Rosemary has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Rosemary says the new bus rapid transit line is going to run through largely middle-class areas rather than areas of poverty where public transportation is most needed. Why is it planned to be that way, Sean?
So there's kind of two things to unpackage there. First of all, the referendum is not just about the Red Line or one rapid transit line. It's a 70% increase in transit service across the county. It would create three rapid transit lines, so also the Blue Line, which is on Washington Street, and the Purple Line, which goes north on Meridian and then east on 38th Street, and then extended hours and better frequencies across the system, as we talked about earlier. On the Red Line point itself, it's been separated out because there was an opportunity to find capital funds, construction funds, through a federal grant. The Red Line runs from Broad Ripple to the University of Indianapolis, and there is a stunning misconception that it serves higher income areas exclusively, and that's just actually untrue. The demographics of the corridor are such that about 28% of households along the corridor are below the poverty line. That's more so than the Blue Line or the Purple Line. About close to a third of households include at least one person with a disability, and it includes four food deserts. So there's a long stretch on the route between 38th Street and 16th Street where the average sale price of a home is about $32,000. So there is really extreme need along that corridor. The other thing that it does is if a referendum does not pass the Red Line is able to be constructed, then Indianapolis has kind of a starter frequent network because the Route 39, which runs on East 38th Street, and the Route 8, which runs on Washington Street, are both east-west routes that City County Council invested in about 3 years ago to make those 15-minute routes. And this would create a north-south spine that would connect to every route in the system except for one, which would really give Indianapolis the start to a frequent grid, which is really, really important to allowing people to get from point A to point B much, much faster.
Shoshana, is the plan adequate to the city's needs, or is it just a start in your view?
Well, of course, we want to see a regional transit system where everyone can get to every piece of our region. But this is a huge step forward. This is a once-in-a-decade opportunity to move forward on a transit system that's going to connect thousands of people, particularly low-income people of color, to good jobs, healthcare, and school.
Is it? But so you think it is a huge opportunity to move forward. What more would be needed on top of this, do you think?
Well, We fought at the legislature to get this opportunity for Marion County to vote. And then if it passes this year, then the next step would be Hamilton County and other townships connected to Marion County would then have the opportunity to vote as well. So it begins a process of really creating a shared interconnected system where all of our region can act as one family and everyone can have access to the benefits of our community and our economy.
We've gotten another email from a listener named Sean. Again, if you want to reach out to us via email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Sean writes, for the disabled community, it is atrocious. And after over 20 years of the ADA, Indy is still in multiple violations of the ADA. Transportation is one of many. I have had to give up 2 jobs due to it. Are there going to be attempts to make this more ADA compliant, Sean?
Absolutely. So on the rapid transit lines that we talked about, the experience there is very similar to what you would see in a light rail system anywhere else in the country where you go to a platform, the bus pulls up, doors open, people off, people on, but then it gives you a nice level boarding so you can roll a wheelchair or a stroller or a bike on and off the bus. One of the big points there is job access. Another reason the red line was singled out first is that it connects more jobs than any of the other lines in the system. There's an incredible density around the line. It connects 140,000 jobs, which is roughly 1 in 4 jobs in Marion County is within walking distance of that red line. So yes, when you see infrastructure like this go in, as we've seen in Minneapolis or Cleveland or Kansas City or Los Angeles or Seattle or many, many other cities that are looking at implementing rapid transit service like what the red line is, then people have the ability to move to that line, to find a job along that line, and to really increase their mobility. Now, again, we're talking about a much broader system. Indigo's done a nice job with their current buses of making sure that they're accessible. They all have ramps. The buses are all able to kneel. Now, that slows down service. That makes things a little bit more difficult. One of the things that Indigo does today is provide what's called open door service countywide, which is if you're a qualified rider, if you have a disability and are a pre-qualified rider, you can schedule it 24 hours in advance. It'll pick you up at your door and take you to work and then back. That's a service that, like I said, is provided countywide, and that would remain under this plan.
And you mentioned that they're within walking distance. How are we defining walking distance?
Within half a mile of a station.
Okay, so because technically, I suppose one could argue that when Charlie was stranded that night, he did manage to walk back. But
you could.
It's that way. We are talking about poverty and opportunity, part of our ongoing conversation called Chasing the Dream. In this segment in particular, we're talking about the importance of mass transit in dealing with poverty. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener named Stephen has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, my question is, I understand the investing in the mass transit, but how about investing in more higher-paid jobs in the inner city?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Stephen.
Thank you, and you all have a good day.
Thanks. So, we're really talking about whether and that's been a debate that's gone on now since the late 60s about, to some degree, seeing if you can attract more business to impoverished areas. It's gone by many different names. Enterprise zones is probably the one I'm most familiar with. Are these incompatible strategies, or are they something that should work hand in glove? Shoshana.
I think all of those work together. Without a bus rapid transit system, then creating jobs, getting people to work. Cities compete with each other for best jobs and opportunity. And if Indianapolis is going to be a great city, we need to invest in infrastructure like public transit. If we don't make smart investments now, we're going to lose out to more dynamic areas. This is an opportunity to make the kinds of investments we want to see in low-income communities of color, particularly, and really not only invest in building business and the jobs that go with the transit build-out and all of the jobs that are going to be generated through the rapid transit lines, but also investing in the people that live there and make sure that the people that live in the hardest hit communities are getting the jobs that are created and are benefiting and sharing in the abundance that will be created through the transit system.
Charlie, I probably should have asked this earlier. Given that we've pretty well documented that the public transportation system now needs improvement, have you lost, or perhaps a better term would be, had to pass on jobs because there was no way for you to get to the work site?
I had an opportunity for a job some years back, and it was out by on the west side by the old airport. It was in the industrial park, and there was no bus service to that area. So the gentleman that I was having a conversation with, I told him, I says, there's no way that I can get out there. There's no bus service out there. And he said, well, could you get there this first time? Could you find a way to get out there? And I said, well, I'm not going to have somebody drive me every day for that distance. So I did actually manage to get that job, but it was simply by the luck of the draw, so to speak, because there was a former employer that I had worked with before. And once I got to the job, I saw him, and then I was able to get a ride with him. But if that guy didn't go to work, then I didn't go to work. But that was the way my transportation opportunity was at that time. So I still didn't have dependable transportation, because if that guy was late or he didn't go to work at all, I was stuck.
Sean, in terms of we know economists are projecting that there's going to be a worldwide labor shortage in about 14 years, I think, is when they say it's really supposed to crest in 2030. And savvy places are thinking about stuff like this so that people can get to. Are there employment opportunities? Are there employers who are saying, you know, no, we're not going to come to Indianapolis, or we're not going to do business in Indianapolis because, you know, our labor force isn't going to be able to get to work. And if so, what sorts of jobs are we losing by not having that kind of public transit system?
Well, higher wage employers definitely are looking for transit served locations when they're siting places. Salt Lake City recently made a huge investment in a light rail system throughout Salt Lake, and it was a major regional initiative. It's been a very, very successful system. They were able to lure Goldman Sachs as an employer onto one of their rail lines, and they credit it to their investment in transit. To be able to get a major employer like that. So it's hard to say. People say we don't have access to transit, so we're not going there. But it's definitely easy to say we're not attracting people here. We're not attracting businesses here because of our transit system.
And when you say Salt Lake City made a huge investment, how large an investment was that?
I'm not sure off the top of my head.
How much are we talking about in our investment if the referendum passes?
The referendum would be for a quarter of a cent income tax, which is one quarter for every $100 of income. It would generate about $56 million a year in Marion County.
And how much, with the expanded mass transit system that we're talking about, what's the price tag on that?
So right now, Indigo operates at about $70 million a year, which is woefully low compared to all of our peers. This would take their operating budget up to about $108 million a year. The capital construction cost for this entire plan is about $390 million.
Okay, so we're looking at that what amounts to about a slightly more than a 50% increase in their operating budget for the year, and about $390 million, I think you said.
Correct.
in capital investment. Shoshana, what are we going to get back for that money?
I think as people of faith, and the reason why cross denominations, the 12 largest denominations across the region are investing in this, is because we believe in family and keeping people together and sharing in God's abundance. Transit's not just a decision about dollars and cents. It's about whether we invest in our neighbor. As people of faith, we believe that we take care of folks when when they're in hard times, and that we pull together, that we have a responsibility to create a community where everybody thrives. And transit is a referendum, really, about that value. And do we invest in each other, invest in our neighbors?
We are talking about poverty and mass transit. It's part of our ongoing conversation called Chasing the Dream, Poverty and Opportunity. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Sean Northup. He is with the Metropolitan Planning Organization. Shoshana Spector, she's the executive director of Indy Congregation Action Network. And Charlie Davis, an Indianapolis resident whose life is affected by mass transit. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're continuing our conversation called Chasing the Dream, Poverty and Opportunity. In this show in particular, we're talking about the connection between poverty and mass transit. My guests are Sean Northup. He's with the Metropolitan Planning Organization. Shoshana Spector. She is the executive director of Indy Congregation Action Network. And Charlie Davis, who is an Indianapolis resident who is dependent upon public transportation to pursue his work. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Luke has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Luke, welcome to the program.
Hey, I love the show. I called in once about immigration. But I wanted to say that I worked at a lot of places, and one of the first questions that employers ask is reliable transportation. Do you have reliable transportation? And I can't tell you how many good people that I know, good hard workers, who don't have reliable transportation. And, you know, it would really help a lot of people with more buses and then all the stuff that you guys are talking about right now. We need that because there are so many good workers who can't get to their job. Thank you. Go off the line.
Thanks very much for the call, Luke. Sean.
Well, that's the point we were trying to talk about a second ago, is we define good service as every 15 minutes or better. And so under the current system, there are very few parts of the city that have good service. Under this plan, about half of jobs would be located on a frequent, useful transit line. Low-income households today, about 16% of low-income households are located along a good transit line. That goes up to about half as well. So there's expanded access, not just to transit, but expanded access to really useful, good transit service.
Gotten an email question from a listener named Ryan. And if you want to reach out to us via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Ryan says, could the guest speak about the increased importance of solving Indy's transit issues due to increased neighborhood development around the city's core? As neighborhoods like Fountain Square and Fall Creek Place later return to the city center, the poor will be forced further and further away from the central business district. Shoshana, I'm going to let you speak to that one.
I think that in the best cases, we make a commitment ahead of time to ensure that there is affordable housing and as a part of any of the build out of transit. So at the end of the day, it's a decision about whether or not we share in the benefits that transit is going to generate. So we want to create a system where everyone has access to a good job, and then we make sure that through targeted hire programs, for example, the city of Los Angeles created a targeted hire program where they prioritize job access for people returning from prison, folks that had had a hard time, single mothers and people that have had a hard time finding work, and then creating a training program alongside that. So it's really a decision that Indianapolis makes in investing in the people that are already in those communities, making sure that there's affordable housing connected to any of the transit hubs. All of these pieces are about good planning and the commitment we make to each other.
And just to contribute to that, Shoshana, a lot of these neighborhoods, India is really rich with a tradition of streetcar suburbs, these neighborhoods that were built around transit, around being walking distance to transit, Fountain Square, Broad Ripple, West 16th Street. If you talk to any one of these neighborhoods about what's in your toolbox for neighborhood revitalization, transit is always near the top of the list, whether you're talking to INHP or LISC or any of these other organizations that are focused on neighborhood rehabilitation.
Well, and I'm thinking, admittedly, this is a city that has a community that has a far different profile than ours, but I remember being in Aspen, Colorado for a conference some years ago and being told by one of the city planners there, it's obviously a very high-income community that depends an awful lot on tourism and people traveling in, as Indianapolis has grown to do, and to get people to work in their service industry, they now have to bus them in an hour and a half to 2 hours away to absorb that cost. So I'd like to talk a little bit, in addition to the cost and the moral argument, which I think we have addressed here, what about the intricacy of the planning process here? Because one of the things that I think Ryan is referring to is, you know, if we promote a city, and we've done shows on this, that is more walkable, that tends to gentrify downtown neighborhoods, which often displaces people who are low income and pushes them further out, so they become even more dependent on adequate public transportation systems. Sean, I'm going to let you have a first crack at that.
And
I want to hear everyone's thoughts.
And
as
you talked about in the previous shows, the market is screaming for more walkable, transit-served locations. My concern would be if we were building line by line, gentrification would be a huge issue on each line, because that real estate would become very, very desirable. And so the market would be gobbling up that real estate very quickly. When we're talking about a system-wide expansion, we're talking about a transit expansion that doesn't keep up with transit demand, but that is faster than the housing market can keep up with. It's unlikely that if we're able to build out this plan in 5 years, as is proposed, that gentrification would happen citywide. That's just not the case. If we're not going to build housing where people can walk to work or find other modes to work very easily, then being able to connect people from where they live to where they work is important, and that's a key part of this plan.
Charlie, in your view, how should we go about making sure that in the planning process we make this system serve the people who need the help the most?
I'd just like to say that, you know, the better the service and the better and the farther out that the transit system goes, it's going to benefit everyone. Anybody that needs, my hope would be that when this plan unfolds, that people will recognize how important the transit system is, that they will become riders, and therefore that's creating more revenue for the transit system, and it also has an impact on our environment. So if we could continue to build up the ridership of the transit system, and it also allows people access to jobs that are going to be farther out. We keep talking about the people that are going to be pushed out into a different area, and the fact that area needs to be served with a transit system that works for them. But by the same token, we still need this transit system so that those people will be able to get, because they are disadvantaged, and they'll need to be able to get to the places where jobs are. And they're going to need the opportunity for job training and things of that nature, to medical care and all of those things. So the bus system as it stands has actually isolated a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so that does not allow those who are impoverished to get to the jobs that they need to sustain themselves.
Well, and I want to make it clear, I'm not trying to make an argument against the rapid transit system here. I guess what I'm trying to get at is it seems to me that there are some planning challenges that accompany it. And are there steps, Shoshana, we can take to minimize the consequences for, again, a lot of the folks who are going to be the most dependent on this system?
Absolutely. Cities can decide that any time they connect public funds to, say, any sort of public project or any developer that's going to get public funds associated with this project can have community benefits attached to that. So that can mean they can be required to set aside a certain number of public housing or affordable housing units. They can be required to make sure that the hours worked on the projects, whether it's construction or any other kind of service that comes out of transit, that those jobs are directly benefited from people in those high-hit communities. I think there's a lot of steps that the city can take. And the first step is that we need to make sure that the opportunity is available, that we have a once-in-a-decade shot at winning a transit system that gets people to work, and we're going to continue to fight to make sure it's the most equitable system that we can build.
Gotten an email from a listener named Julie, and again, if you want to find us on email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Julie says, it is exciting Indianapolis is wanting to improve our transit system. What about rail systems? Are there any future plans for light rail transit system in Indy or even Indiana? Buses are great, but they still rely on being in traffic. And as we know, traffic can be unpredictable. Sean?
There's no rail plans at present. So this funding source was authorized by the state legislature. And in the statutory language, they've prohibited rail. So this funding cannot be used to pay for a rail project. The one thing I would say to that is that what's more important is really good transit service that's frequent and is reliable. And that's more important than whether it runs on rubber tires or steel tires.
Gotten another email from a listener named Tom, who's offering a suggestion. He says, give all school-age kids free bus service now. Is that feasible, Sean? How much would it cost? And what would the impact likely be?
That's certainly part of the conversation. So Indigo needs to conduct a fare study as part of all this. Right now it's $1.75 for every ride. And so there's a lot of things they need to look at, like transfers and discounts for low-income households or free rides for kids, which is some things that Edmonton, Alberta just rolled out a plan to lift 10,000 people out of poverty. And part of it was free transit for kids, free transit for at-risk youth, free transit for the elderly, and discounted fares for low-income folks. So it's definitely part of the conversation.
We've gotten a question via Twitter from a listener named Ashley. If you'd like to reach out to us via Twitter, you can find us at WFYI. Ashley says, as someone who supports mass transit expansion but doesn't use it, what can I do to help Indy's transit problem? Shoshana.
Well, as Ashley mentioned, it's going to take all of us pitching in to make sure that people are educated and they understand that, one, this is going to be on the ballot on November 8th, and that they get out and vote. So particularly bus riders and people most likely to benefit are often not voting at big numbers. So this year, IndyCan has put together a program to reach out to 80,000 bus riders, their friends and families, to make sure they know about the opportunity to vote on mass transit on November 8th. And it's really going to take everyone across the city. It's part of a bigger effort. It includes IndyCan, the Chamber of Commerce, neighborhood organizations. Everybody is pitching in to do their part so that we can go out door to door, on the phone, in kitchen tables, talk to people about what is really at stake for our city and making it a fairer city for everybody. So people can go to indycan.org to sign up if you want to volunteer. There's also a website that's called Transit Drives Indy, which has a lot of resources for people on how they can get involved.
We've heard from a listener named Robert via Facebook. You can find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI. Robert says, if we were to increase the mass transit system, I would give up my car in a heartbeat. I have been overseas and seen their mass transit in action. I wish we had something like that here. Robert's right. I mean, in other parts of the world, they have done far more with this. What accounts for our lag? I mean, you know, anyone who's traveled, for example, in other parts of the world knows that the systems are a lot more reliable, even in our best cities. There are many, many European cities that are far better served. What accounts for the lag here in the United States in dealing with this? Everybody's looking over at you, Sean, so I'm assuming that means they want you to answer this one.
There's been a little bit of a vicious cycle. So in the 50s and 60s, we changed the way that we built cities, and we started building more suburbs, more spread out areas, more freeways, and invested less and less in transit. And at the same time, so in Indy in the 70s, we did Unigov and incorporated 400 square miles, and then all of a sudden there was pressure to spread transit service out to all 400 square miles. At the same time that you're pushing the budget down. And so you're creating service that's just not useful. And so the only people that really do ride it are people that have to ride it. And so it justifies less expense, and it's kind of a vicious cycle that pushes it down and down and down. And now we're to the point where nationally you're seeing demand for transit kick back up because it's gotten so austere around the country. And you're seeing regions all across the U.S. starting to look at referenda like this or other ways to invest in their transit system to bring it up to snuff.
Yeah, sure, Shana.
I would say the good news is that we have an opportunity to fix that. So regardless of the way we've all been struggling through with our transit system up to date, the reality is in 6 months, that 175,000 people will have to step into the voting booth and vote yes. And so this is an opportunity to make a public testament to creating a fair city and the future of Indianapolis by voting yes on mass transit. So to get there, it's really going to take all of us going door to door, neighbor to neighbor, and talking with folks about what's at stake for our city and our region. And if we do that, we're going to see much better opportunities down the road.
Practical terms, Shoshana, I'm going to stay with you. We get this improved mass transit system. How will it transform the life of this community? You keep coming back to it's going to be fair. What are the real ways that will be manifested?
I think of a woman in one of our churches who's a CNA. She dedicates her life to being with people in their most dire moments at the edge of death. She gets up in the morning at 5 o'clock and takes the bus for 3 hours and then walks an extra mile to get to her job. And these are the most important people in our community are spending sometimes 4, 5, 6 hours commuting. So if I can walk out of my door and every 7 minutes there's a bus and I don't even have to think about the schedule and I can get to work and I can be, I can tell my employer that I have reliable transportation and I don't have to turn down a job. It's a game changer for Indianapolis and for people who are every day taking care of the most vulnerable in our city.
Charlie, we've got just a little bit more than a minute left. If this goes through, how will it affect your life? How will having a better mass transit system affect your life?
It's going to make, for me, the kind of change that allows me more freedom to catch that bus, as Shoshana said, that I can walk out my door and catch that bus and only have to maybe wait 7 minutes. It's going to my cost of transportation as it stands now, I don't have to depend on anybody to come and get me or to take me somewhere. So it'll just allows me the freedom that everybody wants to have to go where they need to go to enjoy the other things in life. I might not be able to go maybe to a music convention or a music center, but now that I have bus transportation, I can go to some of these events all around town. So that, to me, is a game changer as well.
Well, and it sounds like also pursue economic opportunities that are further out and much easier to stretch. Well, I'm afraid that's probably going to have to be the last word. We're getting a little bit close on time, but I would like to thank my guests, Sean Northup of Metropolitan Planning Organization, Shoshana Spector, who's the Executive Director of Indy Congregation Action Network, and Charlie Davis, who has lived the subject of this show. I'd like to thank all of you. It's been an enlightening conversation. Thank you for being here with us.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
Certainly. And I also would like to thank our listeners. I know we did not get to all of your questions. We are going to continue talking about this. Also, would like to invite our listeners to come back on Thursday when we're going to have a fascinating conversation with the author Michael Sheldon about a new book about Herman Melville that changes the way we're going to look at that famous writer. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle.
Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cherzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.